Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
And I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of Darth Tax Evader to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is fractal wrongness.
We talked about fractal wrongness previously, a few episodes ago. I can't remember the exact context. Something Trump said.
Obviously. Yeah, yeah. Something was so wrong. Yeah, at every level. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is from a computer science student in the kind of early 2000s, a guy called Kunwoo Lee, who wrote A Lexicon of Computing. And he said, fractal wrongness is the state of being wrong at every conceivable scale of resolution. That is, from a distance, a fractally wrong person's worldview is incorrect. And furthermore, if you zoom in on any small part of that person's worldview, that part is just as wrong as the whole worldview.
Excellent.
So, yeah, that's what this is, basically. It's when an argument is so wrong on so many levels, but it doesn't matter if you think, all right, well, I need to just kind of back away from it and look at it like the whole thing. No, that's completely wrong. But then you take any individual detail, you think, no, that's also wrong.
It's also just wrong. So our bit where we throw people a bit of a line and say, well, you know, to be fair, you can't even do that because you can't get far enough away to see it. And the further you get away, the more it begins to look like the Death Star.
What I find is, in this one, the response to someone saying something so fractally wrong is usually, okay, so first of all, because before you really address the point that they're trying to make, you have to address some of the inaccuracies or wrong things.
Yeah, you've got to kind of zoom out from to beyond the solar system and go, right, okay, now just we're working within this framework, which is wrong. And so what you're saying in that context, fine, okay, we've worked out where you are. Now let's address the particular point that you're making in the world of wrong. Yeah.
So our first example from Trump comes from when he was talking to Sean Hannity about the national debt. And this was when he'd been president for about 9 months.
The country, we took it over, it owed $20 trillion. As you know, the last 8 years, they borrowed more than it did in the whole history of our country. So they borrowed more than $10 trillion, right? And yet we picked up $5.2 trillion just in the stock market, possibly picked up the whole thing in terms of the first 9 months, in terms of value. So you could say, in one sense, we're really increasing values, and maybe in a sense, we're reducing debt. But we're very honored by it, and we're very, very happy with what's happening on Wall Street.
Okay.
I mean, you can't say any of that. You can't say that by the stock market going up, you're increasing value or reducing debt. Apart from any of that, Obama didn't borrow $10 trillion, over $10 trillion, or more than had ever been borrowed
in the history of time.
Under Obama, in those 8 years, the national debt grew by around eight point six trillion,
right?
Which was high, admittedly.
Yeah.
So it grew from around 11.5 to around 20.
Do we know what happened under Trump?
Well, we do, because he was only in for 4 years instead of Obama's eight, but it grew 6.7 trillion under Trump.
In the four
years. So significantly more.
That's a bit like, it's a bit like when you look at the different packs of goods, like raspberries. I was doing that this morning. When you look at raspberries, there's 200 grams or whatever that is, 6 ounces, and then for a certain price, and then you get another one, which is almost twice as much. Uh-huh. But not quite. and you stand there and you can't work out.
I just want to get my calculator out.
handily, sometimes they put, this equates to, you know, $13.67 per pound or something like that, you know, the equivalent of that. Uh-huh. So it's a bit like that with Trump. You kind of go, hang on a minute. So he did $8 trillion in 8 years, and you did six in 4 years.
6.7 in 4 years.
Yeah, so it's not as bad as Obama, but it's worse than Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Yeah.
But apart from that, apart from the fact that he got the numbers wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And suggested that Obama was much worse than he was. I mean, this was in 2017, so he couldn't have predicted how bad he would be.
Everybody else could.
But he was also saying that because the stock market had gone up since, and he's not even talking about since he took office, just since he was elected. So like from the November when Obama was still in charge.
Right.
Because the stock market grew, that somehow paid back the national debt, which is not how any of that works. It's not.
No.
Those things are not connected or fungible.
Except in Trump's head, where all money is his money.
Yeah.
And all debt is somebody else's problem.
Yeah. But there isn't there isn't a way of looking at the stuff he said that makes it right.
No. It's a bit like the twisted, self-torturous things that senators or MPs over here have to go through in order to defend the current position of Trump, normally, or Johnson. There's kind of, there's no conceivable way that what you're doing looks right in order to, for you to come out with this strangulated, you know, tied in knots. An escapologist would be frightened by the shapes that you're pulling in order to justify what you're saying. You just kind of go, well, no, it's all kinds of wrong. It's every kind of wrong.
It's wrong on so many levels.
Yeah.
Our second Trump example is when he was at a rally and talking about voter ID.
We believe that only American citizens should vote in American elections. Which is why the time has come for voter ID, like everything else. Voter ID. You know, if you go out and you want to buy groceries, you need a picture on a card. You need ID. You go out and you want to buy anything, you need ID and you need your picture. In this country, the only time you don't need it, in many cases, is when you want to vote for a president, when you want to vote for a senator, when you want to vote for a governor or a congressman. It's crazy.
It is crazy. It's crazy.
Madness.
Anyone would believe that
a word he said. Yeah. That bit, the only time when you want to go out, when you have to, in many cases, well,
yeah. The only time in many cases that you don't need ID is when you're voting.
Like, you need it if you're buying gas or gum or...
anything beginning with G.
Tickets to the movies.
Guns. Except guns in some cases.
Guns in some cases. In many cases. Then you need an ID. But it doesn't matter. You could have any old ID. It doesn't matter. But you don't need a background check. So that's fine. Yeah.
So the idea that voter ID is the solution to the almost non-existent problem
of voter fraud.
Is wrong. The idea that voter fraud is a problem is wrong. The fact that you need ID to buy groceries is wrong. And the idea that anyone doesn't believe that only American citizens should vote in American elections is wrong. We believe this, therefore we need to do something different because it's not working right now. It is working. You know, and what we need to do is voter ID, and we need to do it because you need ID for everything else. None of that is accurate and doesn't address the problems with requiring voter ID or at least photographic ID.
And none of it follows. None of it is not an accumulative truth, you know, happening there. He's not stacking up the rock solid premises and then lead to the inevitable conclusion that therefore we're going to have to introduce voter ID to counter voter fraud, which stops the likes of him getting in. Well, this time didn't last time, worked perfectly in his favor, except there wasn't any, even though he won, he was looking for it. And that's the other
Now, we have found a few examples of Republicans voting.
That's true.
Voting yeah. more than one state yeah. or voting twice. Yeah. yeah,
exactly. Yeah, increasing Biden's majority. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So okay. when I look for examples, unlike Mark, I actually put some proper time and effort into it. I don't just kind of look at any old nonsense that happened along in the last couple of days.
And string it into some sentence that might or might not be. Yeah.
But this one from Don Jr. happened just yesterday. It just fell.
That was wrong on so many levels.
Into my lap.
Right.
And it is such a wonderful example. It is. Okay, so it's a tweet from Don Jr.
Yeah.
What he does is he quotes the Nicki Minaj tweet about her cousin in Trinidad.
Right.
It says, my cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding, etc.
Yeah. yeah.
So he quotes that old tweet from Nicki Minaj from September.
Right.
And links to a New York Post article. Mm-hmm. That says man's agonizing penile pain is found to be rare side effect of COVID. And this is the sentence that Donald Trump Jr. puts with those two.
Right.
It seems Nicki Minaj is the science and not Fauci.
Okay.
So if that sentence made sense, it might I think what he was going for was that you can trust Nicki Minaj for science stuff
and not
instead
Fauci,
of Anthony Fauci.
Because there are two random events.
Yeah. Presumably he thinks that the New York Post article kind of somehow proves Nicki Minaj's point.
Yeah. Which surely can only work if that man's agonizing penile agony was the same man whose testicular agony.
I mean, you could argue. It could be evidence in favour of the kind of side effect she was talking about if it was a swollen testicle instead of penis pain.
There you go, yes.
And also,
yes.
if it was anything to do with the vaccination, because that article is about someone who got a blood clot in his dick after getting COVID.
Yes.
So it's not even the vaccine.
The vaccine, no.
It's not the vaccine, it's not his testicles. It doesn't. None of it fits together to make the point he's trying to make.
On so many levels. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, if you read the article,
in New York Post,
it is about the fact that this kind of thing is very rare and probably was because this man had a rare blood clotting disease.
Right.
And blood clots are a rare side effect of getting COVID, not of the vaccine, but it kind of was combined in this individual with his predisposition to blood clots. And it also, it's just a kind of suggestion that it might have been because of the COVID, because it was just a few weeks after he tested positive for COVID. It's not necessarily because of the COVID. This guy was prone to blood clots anyway. It might have just happened
at the same time.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's even the headline, man's agonizing penile pain is found to be rare side effect, isn't true. If you read the article, it's kind of maybe suggested possibly to be rare side effects of COVID, but even if it was definitely, it still wasn't the vaccine, it still wasn't his testicles, and it still doesn't prove Nicki Minaj is better scientist than Anthony Fauci.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Would it were the case that our politicians could be as succinctly batty in conglomerating all of the wrongness in one place, but they kind of don't do that because they're a little bit, devious, stupid. They're a bit more stupid, is what I'm grasping for.
More stupid than Don Jr.?
Well, are they though? And Don Jr. is an MP, isn't a member. Not many of the people that involved in this story are either. Well, no, they are, but they're too busy concentrating on this to actually do any MPing. So this is the Tory party's Partygate, which is ongoing. A party was held on May the 20th, 2020. It was the revelation, which is 5 days after the one that was dismissed as a work event when photos appeared of a large gathering in the garden at number 10.
Now, hang on. Is this the one that was just before Prince Philip's funeral? Or no. Was this a different one?
This is a different one.
This
is the one that was at the end of that hot week in May. And it isn't the one that the press secretary was running a rehearsal press conference about,
right?
For the December. So
was this one? Was this the one with the email? Yeah. Saying bring your own. Oh, okay, right. Yeah. It's really difficult to keep all of the lockdown parties.
Yeah.
In your, you need a spreadsheet, basically.
You do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could spend £37 billion getting somebody to make one.
It wouldn't be big enough. They'd fall off the end of Excel.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, this one was 5 days after the work event one, which had a large gathering of people in numbers, garden number 10, where there's cheese and wine and no laptops. And that's how we know it was a work gathering. Mm-hmm. We also know there was a party on the 20th of May because Principal Private Secretary to Boris Johnson, Martin Reynolds, sent that email to more than 100 staff, as Sky News reported on Monday, January the 10th.
The email says, "Hi all, after what has been an incredibly busy period, it would be nice to make the most of the lovely weather and have some socially distant drinks in the number 10 garden this evening. Please join us from 6 p.m. and bring your own booze. 40 people gathered in the garden that evening eating picnic food and drinking. Crucially, they included the Prime Minister and his wife. Mr Cummings claims that he and at least one other special advisor said this seemed to be against the COVID rules and should not happen. We were ignored," says Mr Cummings.
So here's the first piles of wrong. That May the 20th, date of this, May 2020, we're in lockdown. We're in full lockdown. You're not allowed to gather. Can you gather with two people? You're not allowed to gather with more than one other person, socially distance, outside. Anyway, in your own garden, in a park, anything. People were getting arrested for sitting either end of a park bench, things like that. Students were getting arrested and fined and sent down from college for having gatherings of three or four other students in their rooms during this period. All right. So that's, and crucially, Boris is there. And Dominic Cummings, the villain, Steve Bannon, had warned them, apparently, in one of his blogs, he's warned them. And said, "Yep, you can't do that. Nothing less than, you know, the optics a little bit could be against the rules. Probably is. Shouldn't do it." So he was asked about this. Boris was asked about it on the same day, and he said this.
"Did you and Carrie attend the Downing Street party that was organised by Martin Reynolds on the 20th of May?
All that, as you know, is the subject of a proper investigation by Sue Gray.
So have you already been interviewed by Sue Gray? And if not, do you object to her questioning you again about this?"
All that is subject for an interview, for an investigation by Sue Gray.
So it's so wrong, it's laughable. There he is laughing. Sue Gray, by the way, is a senior civil servant, former Director General of Propriety and Ethics in the Cabinet Office, and was appointed by Boris to investigate, and whose findings he can choose whether to act on, after Simon Case recused himself because he himself held a drinks party over Christmas in 2020, the previous cabinet guy. So, right, which we talked about before. Okay, so on the next day, Tuesday, 11th of January, Angela Rayner, Deputy Labour leader, asks an emergency question about it in the House of Commons, and Boris is not in attendance because he didn't want to answer any questions despite having no official engagements on that day. Wednesday, the 12th of January, Boris pops up before Prime Minister's question times and apologises.
"When I went into that garden just after six on the 20th of May 2020 to thank groups of staff before going back into my office 25 minutes later to continue working, I believed implicitly that this was a work event. But Mr Speaker, with hindsight, I should have sent everyone back inside. I should have found some other way to thank them, and I should have recognised that even if it could be said technically to fall within the guidance, there would be millions and millions of people who simply would not see it that way, people who suffered terribly, people who were forbidden from meeting loved ones at all, inside or outside. And to them and to this house, I offer my heartfelt apologies.
Wow.
You could tell he's sincere because of the way the cadence goes up at the end of each sentence. He's definitely not reading anything.
So yeah. I shouldn't have done it, but it was okay.
Even if it was technically okay.
Obviously the stupid masses are going to think it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
That's basically what he was saying.
That's why I'm apologising right now. And let's say no more about it and move on. Yes. So it's that. Yes. So yes, there was a party. I did go, but I didn't know it was a party. And even if I did, and it was, yeah, was okay.
And I was only there for 25
it,
minutes.
Yeah. The optics were bad. And I implicitly understood it was a work event. Okay. However, on the following day, Boris cancels a public engagement to go to a vaccination centre because a member of his family is self-isolating, apparently. Mm-hmm. So on Friday, Downing Street apologises to the Queen, for events in Downing Street on April 2021, which, according to the original report in The Telegraph, included people drinking and dancing to music and one attendee being sent shopping with a suitcase to fill with bottles of wine. They apologised because this occurred the night before the Queen was forced by the COVID rules in place to sit by herself at her husband's funeral, her husband of 73 years' funeral at St George's Chapel in Windsor.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one person who literally could have said, fuck that, I'm having my family everywhere around me, it's her.
The fucking Queen.
Nobody could possibly have done anything about it.
No, because she's the Queen, she's been married to the Duke of Edinburgh for 73 years. You know, to put up with the Duke of Edinburgh for 73 years.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Deserves our sympathy. But yeah, you know, no, sitting there all on her own. And whilst the night before, Tesco's on the Strand is being ransacked of its wine by somebody wheeling a suitcase.
Fucking suitcase.
Yeah, and apparently a fridge had been delivered earlier the same day to put the wine in. Yeah. Anyway, so remember that Dominic Cummings said that he told Boris he shouldn't do it? Well, on January the 18th, Boris tells Sky News this.
I can tell you categorically, that nobody told me and nobody said that this was something that was against the rules, that was a breach of the COVID rules, or we were doing something that wasn't a work event, because, frankly, I don't think, I can't imagine why on earth it would have gone ahead or why it would have been allowed to go ahead.
Well, I can. Because you're in charge of it. Yeah. So basically, I think what's happened is that people have been led to use the fallacy of accent, which we've covered before, and they've concentrated on the no one told me, meaning I am pleading stupidity rather than immoral mendacity. I didn't know it was against the rules, rather than I wasn't informed about this in the way that Cummings implies I was, because if I had, I could be accused of misleading Parliament. Which is a reasonable offence.
So you're saying that his defence, he's defending himself against having claimed...
Cummings claimed that he was warned.
Right, so...
And he's saying, no, nobody told me.
But the first time he said I wasn't warned, he's doing the other one, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah.
The first time he said I wasn't warned, he's still saying... You know, how could I possibly have known this wine and cheese get-together
was not a business meeting? I think Beth Rigby, the interviewer that's conducted the interview, we've just heard one of the answers from Sky News, does have a nice counter for this fallacy.
The idea that you walked into the garden, there's 40 people there, the tables are laid out with food and drink and there's alcohol being served... in the middle of a lockdown and you think that's a work event, that is just ludicrous, isn't it? You are just taking the mickey out of the British people you know how silly that sounds, don't you?
I think what people need to do is wait and see what the report says. But I repeat my deep apologies to people for mistakes that may have been made on my watch.
But you see that looks ridiculous.
Well, indeed it does. And on the following day... Wednesday, January the 19th, Prime Minister's question. Yesterday, Labour leader Keir Starmer agreed.
If the Prime Minister's new defence were true, it requires him to suggest that his staff are not being truthful when they say they warned him about the party. It requires the Prime Minister to expect us to believe that whilst every other person who was invited on the 20th of May to the party was told it was a social occasion, he alone was told it was a work meeting. It also requires the Prime Minister to ask us to accept that as he waded through the empty bottles and platters of sandwiches, he didn't realise it was a party. Does the Prime Minister realise how ridiculous that sounds?
Normally, at the beginning of this thing, we kind of come up with it, also known as. So I think this, the fractal wrongness, can also be called when you're in a hole, stop digging. It's that kind of... It's so wrong, because even the excuses that he's piling on, if you look at them with the forensic eye of a qualified lawyer like Keir Starmer, he says, OK, so, all right, so let's assume what you're saying there is true. This requires us to believe these three other things, the thing about fractal wrongness is that, you know, if you tell a lie, you have to compound the thing.
Yeah, I mean, his defence against us thinking he's a cold, mendacious asshole is, yeah. No, I'm not. I'm just completely stupid.
Exactly.
I am incompetent. When it comes to even noticing a party going on at my house.
The only way to prove that I'm fit to continue in this office of Prime Minister is to show how unfit I am to be in office. And, you know, he keeps pointing out that he's responsible for everything that went on during that time until such time as he's found not to be responsible, at which point he'll go, you see, I told you I wasn't responsible. So, and to end this section in the tradition of comedic callbacks, as well as the best gag of the day yesterday in Prime Minister's question, here's Keir Starmer again.
I expect people to listen to the Prime Minister. I certainly don't want the Leader of the Opposition shouted down. You might not like the day, but this is the day that we've got. Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, I see the very noise. I'm sure the Chief Whip has told them to bring their own booze.
He absolutely loved it. It kind of pity. I think he stole it off the cover of Private Eye, actually. So, you know, bring your own booze, as in boo, like that. And he even allowed himself a wink at Boris Johnson, because I think they must have a kind of behind the scenes. I suspect they have a competition about who can crack the best gags. And I think he just kind of trumped him with that one. But yeah, so, you know, there will be more. Obviously, we're all waiting with bated breath for the Sue.
Well, there'll be more excuses or more parties or both?
More both.
Yeah.
Definitely both. Well, Dominic Cummings, whose blog I read over the last month's blogs. Don't go there. But they're interesting, you know. But he is saying, yeah, forget about the 15th. Look at the 20th, and if nothing happens, there are more pictures to come out. So I suspect he's got all the bloody pictures, or somebody has that, or, you know, the person and the email that he says was sent by him and another special advisor saying, do not have this thing, don't do it, has been passed on to Sue Gray for the report. So when Boris said, I didn't get told not to do it, well, he did, because there is an email now going to him saying, don't do this, because it's, yeah. So it's the worst crime of nobody told me, in the sense that I haven't misinformed the House about whether I was told or not. That's the one that's going to come out, I'm sure. Somebody quipped today that Sue Gray is a new colour from, colour manufacturers Farrow and Ball. It means it's a shade of grey that when it gets spread so thinly, it looks like a whitewash.
Don't go outside unless there's cheese and wine. Everybody knows when you smoke that you're lying. is such a joke. You have to say sorry to the palace. It makes us so wild when you use a fallacy. You gotta find some kind of wild fallacy. You gotta find some kind of wild fallacy.
Of course, the Beastie Boys there with the theme that was played on that Christmas party at number 10 Downing Street. You've got to fight for your right to party.
Fight for your right to have a business meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. To work event.
Yeah. In the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from Independence Day.
Yay.
And this is when David Levinson, the Jeff Goldblum character, has a solution to their alien problem.
Just like they used our satellites against us, we can use their own signal against them. If we plant a virus into that mother ship, it's going to then filter down into all the corresponding ships below.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Just how exactly do we infect the mothership with this virus?
We're going to have to fly their alien craft out of our atmosphere and dock with it. We can enter here. As shown in the satellite photos, we then upload the virus. We then set off some kind of explosion, which will disable it, and that'll disorient the smaller ships below, and that could buy it, I think, at least some time to take them out, take them down, do your stuff.
It's kind of like one of those flow charts where it's got on the thing, it's got, you know, input, and then a big cloud that says, and stuff happens.
Do your stuff.
Yeah, and then on the other end, we get mission accomplished. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a few things wrong with the plan. I mean, not in the film. The film, it works perfectly in the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in the cold light of day, yeah.
There's,
it's not whether you could, it's whether you should. Yeah, I haven't stopped to think about whether you should.
Yeah. So it's not really explained. There are some, if you get like the Blu-ray or something, there's some deleted scenes that kind of help to explain it a bit.
Well, there's other bits where he's sitting around the table going, okay, let me talk you through it one more time.
If you're only watching the film, which would be reasonable, certainly in 1996 before Blu-ray was invented, that you kind of wonder how this guy, this satellite engineer, can write a computer virus on his mid-90s Mac that he can then not only connect to the alien mothership but also upload in their alien computer language that will then cause explosions on the mothership.
Given that it's a Mac, you know, it's going to just go, well, I can't upload that virus to this version of Mojave.
Are there computer viruses that cause explosions as well?
All computer viruses cause explosions the movies.
Yeah.
I think that's a given. I think he's operating on that premise. Yeah.
And the idea that it would then cause the other ships, the non-mother ships, to not be functional is based on the fact that they appear to be communicating between each other. That's all. It's not been established that they can't cope without the mothership.
And that they're communicating in such a way that a computer virus would.
Yeah, how would a computer virus propagate through the kind of signals that, even if there's some kind of remote control thing going on, that doesn't necessarily mean that they would either not have autonomy or be affected by the virus or by explosions or whatever.
Basically, it's a denial of service to AT&T, really. That's what they're saying, isn't it? That's, for alien telecom telephony. Yeah.
Also, I'm not at all convinced when he says we can enter here based on the satellite photos. Where are these satellites pointing?
Yeah.
The mothership is
far away.
Is just kind of in low Earth orbit.
Yeah. What satellites, Earth satellites, that point up?
Yeah, there needs to be a satellite that is in low Earth orbit pointing upwards to see the bottom of the mothership, frankly, which doesn't seem plausible.
No.
There's just so many things that don't make sense about it.
It's wrong on. Do you know what that is? That's wrong on all kinds of levels. Yeah, but it's all right. But yeah, and you can kind of tell that even just listening to the audio, the eyes of the generals surrounding him are widening because he just kind of goes, then what will happen? Like a massive clown will arrive and smash two elephants together, and sausages will fly out and explode the aliens. And they're just, did you just hear what I heard? I don't know. There's something about clowns and sausages. Yeah. Just say that again, will you? Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, what you could remember is this film was only 1 year after the Sandra Bullock film, The Net.
True.
Which was. That and to be fair, the film Hackers, which
there you go.
So that was the level of understanding at the time of
uploading
of
virus
computers.
Right. Whenever you get, because you get a nice graphical user interface whenever you introduce a virus onto a mainframe, you know, onto somebody else's computer.
Oh yeah, it always says virus uploaded.
It says virus uploaded, and then you get, you know, the little blue bar that kind of go all the, you know, because there's, you introduce the countdown, you know, it's that kind of, it's the disarming the bomb on the back of a moving truck.
Anyone who builds an operating system has to build that in, so when you're uploading a virus to the operating system,
it knows what you're doing. And it says okay or cancel. No, I'm okay with that, just carry on. These days, it would put up a whole bunch of pictures, and it would say, "Please identify all the hydrants to prove that you're not an alien." And you go, "Oh my god, what does a hydrant look like on an alien world?" I don't know. Are they green? Well, I don't know. Click them all.
So, our second example is Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers' approach to vaccination and immunization, because he in November of last year he got COVID, and that's kind of nothing that surprising about that. People in the NFL have been testing positive for COVID pretty much all year, and it's been really disruptive to my fantasy team. It's been very, very annoying.
Oh no! Oh no! It's not a money.
I mean, they don't
guarantee.
Think about the real victims in this.
No, no. They just go gung ho. Turn up at a nightclub, hang around with sneezing people.
But Rodgers had said to reporters earlier in the year that when they asked, you know, "Are you vaccinated? What's your stance on vaccination?" He said, "Oh yeah, I'm immunized," and had apparently tried to convince the NFL that he was immunized without having been vaccinated, based on the fact that he had. Basically worked with holistic doctors and homeopaths and other people.
I thought you were going to say healer.
I mean, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
To build up his antibodies.
Oh, okay.
Using homeopathy.
Okay, which, the building up his sense of conviction that he had been vaccinated.
Which is not how homeopathy works, and homeopathy doesn't even work.
Yep. Right. So. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. There's the fractal wrongness just there. Yeah.
So he's doing homeopathy wrong, and then he's trying to use it instead of vaccination, and trying to convince the NFL
that he's done homeopathy right, and B, that homeopathy is pretty much vaccination.
Yeah. So he was classed as unvaccinated by the NFL, and
fair enough.
And he requested kind of a review of that, and they went,
"Can I have a second opinion? I'm willing to take a second opinion."
They basically went, "No, there is no evidence that any of that is anything."
Yeah,
but people do homeopathy wrong. It is a weird thing. I mean, again, doing homeopathy right isn't a thing.
Doesn't.
It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. So you might as well do it wrong.
But you can still get that wrong. In 2014, there was a recall of homeopathic remedies made by a company called Terra Medica. It was recalled by the FDA because they were found to contain actual medicine.
Oh, wow. So they were properly doing homeopathy wrong. I was about to say, can you do it so wrong that it becomes right? It becomes medicine.
Well, yeah, arguably, yeah. If you gave this to the right people with the right illnesses, it might have helped.
Yeah. Because it had actual medicine in it. Was it the homeopathic society that banned them or recalled?
No, it was the FDA, because they had penicillin and or derivatives of penicillin in the supposed homeopathic things, but you know, people can be allergic to penicillin and will not know
in there. Exactly
that they're taking it. So that's why they recalled it. I mean, it's not by any means the only time it's happened. In 2016, the FDA reported that there were some homeopathic teething gels and tablets for babies that had not been diluted properly, in the sense that there was still stuff in there, which probably killed 10 children and caused seizures, fever and vomiting in more than 400 others. And they contained elevated levels of belladonna, which is from Deadly Nightshade.
Yes.
Which, again, you know, homeopaths who get rid of all the stuff that might once have been near their stuff use, theoretically, that kind of thing. But because it doesn't actually end up containing any of it, no big deal.
It just looks good on the label. Yeah. It leaves the shape that once was occupied by something that resembled belladonna.
Yeah. So you can do a thing that isn't right in the first place, and you can still do it wrong. Even then,
two wrongs don't make a right. No. Two wrongs don't make a right.
Wronger and wronger.
Wronger and wronger. Yes.
And our final example comes from Terence Howard, the actor from Empire, I believe he was in, and he was Rhodes in the first Iron Man. And he has some interesting ideas about maths and various other things. He was interviewed by Rolling Stone in 2017, and he told them about a thing that he's apparently been thinking about for a long time, for like since he was in college.
Oh, okay.
Which is that 1 times 1 isn't 1, it's 2. This is his theory on on maths.
I was going to say it isn't, but yeah. All right, yeah.
He says if 1 times 1 equals 1, that means that 2 is of no value, because 1 times itself has no effect. 1 times 1 equals 2, because the square root of 4 is 2. So what's the square root of 2? Should be 1, but we're told it's 2, and that cannot be.
Is the square root of 2 2?
No. It's not 2. We're not told it's 2.
Who's telling him that it's 2? So that kind of falls to the ground there then.
Immediately falls apart. Yeah. And all of the things he's basing his ideas on are wrong. And then the ideas that he comes out with in the end are wrong. It's just, but I mean, this is a thing he calls teriology, from his name, Terence.
Which is
not just about 1 times 1 equaling 2, which it fucking doesn't. But also about the fact that there are no straight lines, like, anywhere. Everything is curves. Basically, everything is waves, somehow. Therefore, waves are curved, and therefore everything is curved. So, therefore, there are no straight lines, so you can't have platonic solids. They don't exist. So Pythagoras is all wrong. And bubbles, why are they spheres?
Right, yeah. No, they're just squares.
Yeah, they might as well be. They could be triangles. Yeah. They could be. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought when I read some of this stuff, and I saw an interview with him on a red carpet where he started talking about this.
Oh my god!
On I think it was the Emmys red carpet.
No wonder he isn't in the next Iron Man. That's what you thought. Yeah.
I honestly felt really sorry for him. I thought maybe he'd had a mental breakdown or something.
Yeah.
But. No, apparently
he's
this
like
is
winning at the end.
This is just how this is him. This is what he thinks about stuff. Wow. He's just a nutter.
Wow!
So
he's not even a kind of a logician, like, because there was
no. But he reckons he is. This is kind of very Dunning-Kruger stuff. He thinks he has understood this better than mathematicians, than literally everyone who's teaching maths at any level. Yeah. He thinks he has understood this fundamental thing about really basic, like about whether if you only have one, there's one of them or two of them. That's what he's misunderstanding.
Wow. And what he's doing is kind of he's got what he thinks he's understanding is quantum theory and the work by Kurt Gödel, who was a logician who did stuff about natural numbers, and he kind of looked at actually the system of numbers can't prove itself to be true. That was his conclusion, having read Gödel Isherbach when I was doing philosophy at university.
I think Bertrand Russell would beg to differ on that.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think many people...
He wrote a significant piece on numbers proving themselves, essentially. But
so obviously Terence Howard hasn't read
either of them.
Hasn't read the basis of philosophy, philosophical stuff of logic. Yeah.
But yeah, he does. Wow. On Terence Howard's Twitter and in other places, you can look it up. I'll link it in the show notes. He has got kind of extended explanations of why 1 × 1 = 2 and 1 × 0 = 1 and things like that. And he's just every bit of it is wrong. Every single...
He's just not grasped the essence of bid mass, has he? He hasn't got to go. He's just doing it all wrong. You know, do the brackets first, you idiot. Yeah.
I mean, it's so basic. when all you need to say to multiply something by zero is, okay, you've got an apple here. That's one apple. If you had no apples, if you had zero of them, how many apples would you have? Like, it's not that hard.
Yeah. No. Yeah, yeah. So, yes.
He still thinks it's one.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it? So is he in receipt of therapy?
I mean, he's not been working a lot, but that's supposedly because he's been focusing on this, because he reckons he's so insightful about it that he said this is the last generation that will be taught that 1 × 1 = 1, because he is going to...
Which
current generation in like being taught it now by, you know, actual qualified mathematicians.
Yeah.
Because once he's through with...
Not just school teachers.
No, once he's through with society, everyone will know then that 1 × 1 = 2.
Oh, no. I mean, the whole of NASA
there's a lot riding on it.
Van Gogh's Elon's trip to Mars, that's it. He's going, oh, no, I'm going to have to take two of everything now. You know, it's going to be the Ark, Elon's Ark.
It's pretty amazing.
That's wrong on all sorts of levels.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out 3 Trump quotes, 2 of which are real, and 1 usually I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
Well, hello. Okay, a bit of a clue there. But before we start on averages and who's scoring what, we should look again at the validity of numbers themselves. See, on the one hand, if we count backwards on that hand from 10, like it goes 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. And then on the other hand, I have 5 fingers, which so 6 and 5 is 11. And I clearly do not have 11 fingers. So the whole validity of numbers, whether they're fractions or anything, completely out the window. I'm with him.
I think if you get Terence Howard on the scoring system, I think you could be doing better than you are currently. If you add up all of the zeros you got.
They would count for one.
Multiply them by the number of times you got zero. You're going to be doing very well. Probably better than the number of times you've played, I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because, yes, ultimately...
Because you've got a one,
isn't it? Surely.
You've scored 1 point 42 times. So that's 43. So
that's
somehow.
Because one of those is actually 2. The second one, 2, is
at
not...
Easily. At least one
is
of them.
1 is 2.
Possibly.
Yeah, at least
of
one of them. Yeah. Well, it's a bit... Exactly. So I've actually scored at least 86 out of 43. Yeah. It's a rip-off, I'll tell you. It's a rip-off.
So
it reminds me of the Infinite Hotel thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The the grasp of the Infinite Hotel is that if you stay in the Infinite Hotel, there's an infinite number of rooms. Somebody arrives, even though all the rooms are occupied, somebody arrives for a room. So what they do is move everyone in an odd number up one room, which leaves the spare room down at one, and he goes into there.
Yeah.
That's what infinity is. Infinity plus one
is still infinity.
It's infinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a larger infinity
plus one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that cannot be.
So, as I said, usually I make up these.
I'm intrigued. Do go on.
But you've been on a bit of a roll recently. You've done very well.
Right.
And one of our listeners has stepped up.
Oh, wicked.
And thinks maybe they can go up against you.
Aha, bring it on.
So this is from Kendall Ivory. Thanks very much, Kendall, for these. And he has come up with a made-up one and two real quotes.
Yep. Yep.
These are basically kind of non-answers that Trump has given in interviews. The first one is in an interview with Sean Hannity, where Sean asked why he should be re-elected. He said, "I think it's very clear that I've done more than any president in the first 4 years. And really, if you think about it, I did more in 47 months than Joe Biden did in 47 years, selling pillows and mattresses. Biden slept for 40 years and woke up being the vice president before dozing back off."
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Number two is with Chris Wallace. It was talking about Trump saying that children were being taught in school to hate America. He says... Right. And Chris was like, where'd you get that from? Trump said, "I just look at school. I watch, I read, look at the stuff. Now they want to change. 1492, Columbus discovered America. We grew up, you grew up, we all did. That's what we all learned. Now they want to make it the 1619 Project. Where did that come from? What does it represent? I don't even know."
Okay. Yeah, that's because that's what they want to do. Right, I want to replace that with the... What? Okay.
And statement number three, this is from an NPR interview with Steve Inskeep, where he was asked why Trump's lawyers claimed that there wasn't any fraud when they were actually in court. That's about the election. He said, "It was too early to ask for fraud and talk about fraud. Rudy said that because of the fact it was very early with the... Because that was obviously at a very, very... That was a long time ago. The things that have found out have more than bore out what people thought and what people felt and what people found."
Okay. Well, that one sounds very Trump because he goes off at one and tries to grasp for the right word. That was very early with the... Because it was obviously a very, very... That was a long time ago. Okay. I look at school, I watch, I read, I look at stuff. That sounds quite Trumpy too. They all do, damn it. Okay. The Sleepy Joe thing, is that the basis of, or the just the extrapolation of Sleepy Joe? Very clear. Okay. Right. I'm going to plump for the one that I think... Okay, I think number three is the one that was made up.
Okay, so of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
I'm more convinced by number two. I look at school, the 1492. It's a kind of a, you know, doing away with Christmas type. Trump type thing.
Okay, so
which makes it all the more reason because it's convincingly made up.
Number two. Real.
I look at school. I watch. I read. Look at the stuff. Now they want to change. 1492, Columbus discovered America. You know, we grew up. You grew up. We all did. That's what we learned. Now they want to make it the 1619 Project. Where did that come from? What does it represent? I don't even know.
I just look at school.
Yeah, I just look at school.
I just look at school. I can no longer go in the playground because there's some kind of, you know, some kind of ban on me doing that. I don't know why. Yeah,
that's how you I read if something is going on at school. You just look at school.
You just look at school, and you watch and you read. It's a bit like those are kind of the words when we were at school and we would have television programs played to us in school. I don't know whether you did, but we did. When you look at school, and those kind of things, I watch, I read. Uh-huh. They're the kind of the level of the programs that we would watch.
Look at the stuff.
I mean, you know, if he needed to have watched a lot more Sesame Street when he grew up. He could have, you know, identified some of the stuff as not being like the other one. Yeah.
So he's just intellectually incurious. He doesn't know where the 1619 project came from. Can't be bothered to look on Wikipedia. No.
And he thinks that that's replacing the 1492 stuff, you know. And he doesn't even do, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean. Didn't even do that bit. Uh-huh. So, you know, we grew up, you grew up. So he's distinguishing himself from we grew up. Well, you did. We all did. Uh-huh. Some of us didn't, Mr. Trump. Some of us didn't graduate from kindergarten, Mr. Trump. Yeah, that's what we learned. Well, you didn't. Obviously, you didn't because you forgot it. Yeah.
So there you go. You also think that number one is real? And number
one is
fake news.
Oh, nice work. Bugger.
So, yeah.
That's really very good.
Now, I think that the selling the pillows and mattresses is a reference to kind of sending mattresses instead of armaments to allies.
Okay.
Because they were talking about that kind of around the whole Ukraine thing when he was saying, you know, I was going to send stuff to Ukraine and Biden did the same thing or Obama did the same thing. But the Sleepy Joe thing also helps there.
Yeah, and I was taken in by that. That's a proper Trump thing to go, 47 of these, 47 of those. You know, that's nice work. Very good. Damn you, you bust. Oh, God. So I was, so that moment of, because that was obviously a very, very long time ago.
Yeah, that's
triple gag.
It does look like a very Trumpy type thing because it is.
Yeah, because it is a very Trumpy type thing.
It is Trump.
It was too early to ask for fraud and to talk about fraud. Rudy said that because of the fact it was very early because that was obviously at a very, very, that was a long time ago. The things that have found out have more than bore out what people thought and what people felt and what people found.
So, okay, wait a minute. So the things that have found out have more than bore out what people found.
Yeah.
So the things they've found have
borne out what they found.
More than what they found.
Yeah.
So the things they found is more than what they found. Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that was real. What a fool I was.
Yeah, this was an interesting interview with Steve Inskeeper at NPR because I don't know how set up it was. I think it was kind of in a bit like the Fox and Friends things where he used to call in.
Yeah.
I think it was a kind of, I don't know if it was off the cuff or what, but NPR isn't his usual format. But Steve Inskeeper did kind of push back on the stuff that he was saying and asked him questions and he didn't like it. It didn't last very long.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things was when he was talking about election fraud was, well, here are some quotes from your own lawyers when they actually got to court, because they were talking about fraud and, you know, going on and on about it. And then when they actually got to the point of making motions in court and judges were like, see if I want to hear this case, essentially, they were saying, this is not a fraud case. Because they couldn't allege fraud once they were actually in court because there was no evidence of fraud.
There was no evidence of it.
And Trump's argument for that was it was too early to talk about fraud. In the cases they'd been trying to get into court for months about fraud.
Because it was a long time ago.
Because, it was a long time ago. But now we found out all of the things.
No evidence. But now they've found out all sorts of stuff. What people thought, what people felt, what people have found. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now we've got all the evidence that Rudy's been talking about all this time. There will be so much evidence and people will be unbelievably aghast at how much evidence we've got. You know, it's not the number of evidence, we know that. It's not the, well, you see, but never mind the quality of them.
Feel the whip.
Just look how many there are. Just count them.
Yeah.
It's hundreds of cases. You know, that's got to be worth something. No, it's not worth anything. Not worth the paper it's written on.
So, yeah. Thanks to Kendall, you are now on 42 out of 82. So still above 50%, but going down.
Nice work, Kendall. You bastard.
Did you know that Elvis once showed up to the White House high as a kite with a bunch of guns?
Did you know that Eleanor Roosevelt once had a romantic relationship with a lesbian reporter?
Hi, we're Stephanie.
And Tux.
From Beyond Reproach, a comedic history podcast where we talk about political scandals like how FDR's grandfather made the family fortune smuggling dope.
And messy government officials like President Johnson, who named his dick Jumbo and would wave it around at people on Capitol Hill.
Gross.
And we do it all while drinking period-appropriate historic cocktails, like JFK's favorite, the Lime Daiquiri.
We are not historians. We're just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. We hope you'll join us on Beyond Reproach for some big facts, good laughs, a little bit of swearing, a lot of drinking, and a real good time.
You can find Beyond Reproach wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
It's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called Ron DeSantis is not a logical fallacy.
Oh, I wish that he were.
I mean, he sure does use a lot, though. And specifically, he's been pushing a lot of straw men around the place.
Right.
Like, there's straw everywhere.
Yeah.
It is fucking insane. It's like...
It's setting fire to them.
It's like when you get one of those giant lorries with lots of hay bales on the back down a motorway, and it's just, there's hay flying everywhere.
Yeah,
it's like that. In Florida.
Whatever he opens his mouth. Yeah, yeah.
Because he just can't stop fighting against things that aren't happening or aren't real.
Yeah,
like critical race theory, for example.
Yeah,
is one of the things that he's just. I mean, last month he said he was going to try and create a law that allowed parents to sue schools that they think are teaching critical race theory, which must really worry the zero Florida schools that are teaching critical race theory.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't account for Floridians that think they are.
Exactly.
So what you've got you've got to make a law. So if these people are being a bit offended by what they imagine is going on, you know, there's a great Australian stand-up who just says, yeah, so then be offended. Nothing's going to happen.
you know,
no one dies if you feel offended. You know, oh, I'm offended. Okay, be offended. That's fine. But but if you make a law that if somebody registers some offence, then you can sue the school that isn't doing the thing that you think they're doing, that we've all been party to, we've all dallied in, unfortunately, in those neighborhood WhatsApp groups, when you kind of go, oh yeah, that'd be good, like during lockdown, neighborhood WhatsApp group, oh, that'd be handy, we could find out when are they next going to collect the garbage, you know, is the store open, are the schools open, is yoga happening, that kind of stuff. But no, it's full of people basically saying things like, oh, there are children over the road jumping up and down and laughing. How do I put a stop to that? Yeah, how do I put a stop to that? It's ruining my day. And then, of course, everybody piles in and going, why don't you just go over and talk to them? Or, shut the fuck up. They're children. They're locked down. They're not at school. They're having fun. Just because you aren't, that's you're taking some effect. That's fundamentally what he's doing. He's weaponizing the Karens. He's weaponizing Karens. That's what he's doing.
I've had a good few arguments on my local next door group.
I can imagine. Is Charlie Kirk one on your notepad? Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. It does open schools up to being kind of sued and attacked by people who think that any mention of race or any mention that not everything in history has been entirely positive in the US.
Yeah, in terms of racial equality. Yeah,
is somehow teaching CRT and... Because nobody seems to... Well, Republicans don't seem to know what it is.
No.
They just think that if anyone says you know, occasionally people have been racist. Sometimes they still are.
Yeah.
That somehow should be against the law.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the party that says that was saying fuck your feelings for 4 years and was complaining about safe spaces and snowflakes is now trying to make it against the law to make them feel uncomfortable.
Exactly. That whole thing about the idea that it's bad to be woke. You know, the party that brings you, you know, you're just suffering from wokery, when actually what you're doing is going, yeah, couldn't we just be a bit nicer to one another?
Yeah.
Can we not just listen to this person's appeal that their rights are being quashed as, you know, as a legitimate thought? You know, let's consider that in the grand scheme of things, rather than just go, well, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable, therefore what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, where is the discomfort? Is it over here or is it with you? It's probably with you, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's introduced this bill in Florida.
Right.
Republican Senator Manny Diaz has sponsored this bill in Florida. It's kind of based on a lot of what Ron DeSantis was saying last month. And it's called the Individual Freedom Bill because they like irony, the Republicans.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't understand it, but no, they like it. It's
yeah.
a bit like the Democratic Republic of Congo, isn't it? The only true bit about that is of, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. The bill, in part, says an individual, by virtue of his race or sex, does not bear responsibility for actions committed in the past by other members of the same race or sex, which is not a thing that anyone like an educational institution has claimed is true. An individual should not be made to feel discomfort, guilt, anguish, or any other form of psychological distress on account of his or her race. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, agreed
enough.
That it shouldn't be based on race, but the idea that people shouldn't feel discomfort in education, that no one should ever be confronted with ideas that might make them think, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah. Like the idea that 1 + 1 = 2, times 1 = 2.
And you do get things like happened in Indianapolis recently, last year. Indiana State Senator Scott Baldwin, Republican, surprisingly, who made up a bill. He drafted a bill to stop well, he did. That's what you do, isn't it? That's
just
what
made it up. Yeah.
You write it down. Yeah. SB 167 in Indiana, which basically was to stop schools from teaching critical race theory, which they don't do. But in presenting this, he said that Marxism, Nazism, fascism, I have no problem with the education system providing instruction on the existence of those isms. I believe we've gone too far when we take a position. We need to be impartial.
Okay, so you can instruct people on the existence of Nazism.
But
don't take a view on it.
Don't make any kind of judgment one way or the other.
Don't say, here's Nazism. Could be bad. Could be wrong. Yeah, could be all right. You know, nice, smart uniforms. Exterminated a lot of people.
Yeah. I have to say, he has since walked back those statements after he received some criticism.
Right, yeah. From everybody else.
From everyone who heard him say them.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the thing. That's what people are having trouble with. Is that these bills are drafted in such a way that it makes it difficult to have a stance, to have a political stance, or no, not even a political stance, just a moral stance on racism being bad and existing.
Yeah, but it's only in America. I suspect that racism in other places is seen to be bad, like which we'll talk about later in our patrons only podcast. So there's sign up, you can hear it, you know, about people accusing the Ayatollah Khamenei of wishing to the destruction of Israel, and you kind of go, yeah, okay, that's kind of bad, that's bad, that's a bad thing. And yeah, it is possible to say, yeah, this regime believes that, and that's not good. That's not a good thing. Surely, if the Republicans are based on the Christian Ten Commandments kind of, you know, they're God-fearing people, aren't they? Generally, they're good. They're Bible observers, or at least they hold them upside down when they stand outside.
Not necessarily readers, but observers. No, yeah,
observers. Okay, they look at the Bible. Bible. Yeah. Look at Bible. I understand religious stuff exists. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know about that.
Look at the stuff.
Look at the Bible stuff, and you know, just the basic that thou shalt not kill. You know, which is fairly high up there. You know, that's probably even well known amongst those people. Does that not sit upon the possibility of making a judgment about the Nazi regime, for instance, or the wish to destroy another country? Yeah, or to see the destruction of a certain race of people, and you kind of go, well, yeah, because that's kind of happens in other countries, and we don't like it. But what we're doing is that when you point it out to us brackets, white folks, it makes us feel a little bit uncomfortable. No, we feel a little bit uncomfortable about that. So what we're trying to do is blame you for making us feel that.
White folks who don't accept that there is any form of imbalance
in
history getting them to where they are now.
Yes, yes. And don't accept that there is no zero-sum equation when it comes to rights.
Yeah.
You know, there's an infinite number of rights, and if more people want more rights, you could just all move up one and make room for that. It doesn't mean you lose rights. It's actually what happens is that you extend to the people that don't have those rights the rights that you have as well. You know, it's not like when women got the vote, men didn't stop being able to vote. It's just that the other half of the population of humanity...
But their vote was diluted by all the women, you see.
Oh, okay.
Their vote held less.
Less power. Yeah. I see what you mean, because they might vote for women for one.
I mean,
thing.
Essentially, that's how what the entire Electoral College is based on.
Is
the kind of the voting power of slave owners.
Yeah.
In the southern states. So, but DeSantis is not only focused on the non-existent teaching of critical race theory, he's also focused on making the non-existent voting fraud stuff going on that needs apparently a whole new system of policing to be put into place.
Wow.
Preferably one that answers to him.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And are they going to name it after the gap in the existence of voting fraud, you know, the void? Are they going to name it Space Force? What are you in charge of? Well, we're in charge of this lack of evidence for voter fraud.
Yeah.
We're going to stamp out voter fraud where none exists.
What he wants to name it is the Office of Election Crimes and Security.
Okay.
And, he wants $5.7 million from... the Florida legislature to create this branch, which will be a kind of private police force essentially, who will have the power to take over investigations from other law enforcement agencies, according to the proposed legislation, and proactively probe allegations of voter fraud in Florida, and conduct proactive information gathering and investigations to identify and prevent potential election law violations or election irregularities.
So remind me again, whose state is Florida?
That would be Ron DeSantis.
He
is the current governor.
Yeah. So if people, for instance, don't want to vote him in again, as you're entitled to do in a
democracy such as the US, his police force would be able to investigate any allegations that there might have been fraud that meant that he didn't get in.
where that wherever those allegations come from, you know, from the lowest in the land to somewhere like the governor's office.
Yeah, yeah.
For instance.
Yeah. Right. And presumably, okay, given that they answer to him, he may have the right or ability to require them not to investigate fraud in the other direction, perhaps.
Yeah. Because that might...
If that existed at all. Yeah. Like in the villages where...
Yeah, where people where have been found to have voted twice. Wow.
Yeah. So he's racing around a boxing ring, knocking down straw men.
But in the febrile atmosphere of the who's going to be in charge of the Republican Party next, or you know, brackets, who's going to get endorsed by Trump to run in 2024? That's the kind of strong arm tactics that Republicans love.
Yeah, absolutely. He is completely playing to the base. Yeah.
All he needs to do is come out and say, they're trying to cancel Christmas. We're going to have a police force that stops people talking about the possibility of not celebrating Christmas on the 25th of December. It's that kind of populist stuff dressed up as there is this problem. Isn't it a Groucho Marx quote that says politicians apply the wrong solution to a problem that doesn't exist?
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. He's saying, okay, there's this massive problem that massively doesn't exist, so I'm going to invent this entirely outrageous thing to solve that problem. And actually what it does is have, out of the public purse, I can have my own private army.
Yeah. And like the kind of rock that repels tigers, when it turns out there is no voter fraud or anyone teaching CRT, he can go, see, it works.
There you go. Works. Bloody works.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all thanks to me.
Yeah. And nobody can fault him for that, because if they did, it might make him feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he can have
that would be against the law.
Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Shockingly, Joe Manchin's belief that there are 10 Republicans with even the smallest level of integrity proved to be wrong again this week. With all 50 GOP senators voting against the John R. Lewis Freedom to Vote Act, which would guarantee online voter registration in every state, along with 15 days of early voting, a reduction in partisan gerrymandering, and protection from harassment for local election officials. Republicans don't want all those things, of course, because if more people vote, they will lose. So they filibustered the vote. An attempt to amend the filibuster also failed, thanks to Senators Manchin and Sinema voting with all 50 Republicans for reasons that are beyond the understanding of anyone except themselves, but might just be money-related, who knows. Senator Ron Johnson gave an object lesson in what happens when you let anyone vote, when he put a poll on his Twitter account asking if the filibuster should be destroyed, with the options, yes, let the Dems win, and no, protect the Senate. Over 180,000 people voted, and 96% of them were in favour of letting the Dems win, apparently. I mean, with that ratio, you can understand why they want to suppress the vote. But according to Mitch McConnell, none of it really matters because voting rights are fine just as they are.
Well, the concern is misplaced because if you look at the statistics, African-American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Fucking hell, Mitch. You're saying the quiet part out loud again.
Take it with a grain of salt, but go do the research, okay? So this is a particular kind of salt, or salts, electrolytes, if you will, because the anti-COVID treatment we're hearing about from recent non-mask-wearing arrestee Christopher Keyes is, wouldn't you know it, yep, drink your own urine. The antidote that we've seen now, and we have tons and tons of research, and this may destroy my credibility, but God's given us all we need. We have peer-reviewed, published papers on urine, Keyes insisted, acknowledging, however, that whilst this latest study has been around for 9 months, it's all anecdotal evidence because it's hard to organise a random placebo trial. Really? It can't be due to lack of available material. Or is it that there are fewer volunteers because they're tired of swallowing all the bullshit previously peddled by Trump, that Keyes taking the piss is just too much to stomach? Reassuringly, Dr. Anthony Pizon, yes, really, chief of medical toxicology at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, recommends not doing this. like we need telling. Since humans excrete waste and toxins through urine, drinking it can expose one to the chemicals and drugs consumed previously. Keyes does say that it'll work even for those who are vaccinated. Is it because you re-drink your vaccine? No need for a booster? Apparently, Keyes has been doing it for 23 years and also drinks hydroxychloroquine. Well, you kind of need something that strong, Chris, to combat your breath. I wonder if his nickname is John.
Honestly, I am just shocked that it's taken them this long to get around to deciding that drinking your piss works against COVID.
I know. It's kind of like, yeah. You know, number one, Trump doesn't. Trump's had the election was stolen for Trump. Number two, drink your own piss. Yeah. It's right there, bubbling under.
For just over a year now, a certain group of people has been claiming that what happened last January 6th was not an insurrection. It's been called a normal tourist visit, a peaceful protest, and by Ted Cruz, definitely not a terrorist attack. Forgive me, Tucker, I don't know what I was saying. I'm just a slimy, pathetic worm. Thank you for correcting me. I won't do it again. Since the mob have started getting charged with trespassing and crimes of violence, some have suggested the lack of any insurrection-based charges proves it wasn't an insurrection, and anyone saying otherwise is a conspiracy theorist libtard. So, it's super fun that Oath Keeper leader Stuart Rhodes and 10 others have now been charged with seditious conspiracy. Presumably, the aforementioned insurrection deniers will now admit they were wrong and avoid moving any goalposts. Rhodes, who looks like a fat white Nick Fury, allegedly worked with other members of the Oath Keepers militia group to transport weapons and ammo to DC in advance of the definitely spontaneous tourist visit, and planned with them over encrypted communication who would enter the building at which stage, including suggesting they stock up on ammo and prepare for a full-on war in the streets. I'm pretty sure we'll be covering this group in more detail in a future episode, because according to early reports, one of their plans to keep their communication secure was to write in cursive, which is one step away from saying, "Ang hei, eik mei, ens pei," and thinking you're totally getting away with it.
Ixnay on the ang pei! Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so you're kicking back at the desk in the office and someone in a uniform comes in and asks you to leave now, some kind of emergency in the building. So, Natch, you up and leave, concentrating on getting out of there fast. You might leave stuff behind and might not be able to get back in to retrieve it because of said emergency. So what do you do? Well, according to Congressman Jamie Raskin in an interview with Insider, of course, you simply ring up the White House on January 7th and ask if their lost and found has the treasured MAGA hat, incriminating phone, bayonet or thunder flash that you left on Pelosi's desk yesterday. Dutifully, when asked for your name and address, you hand it over, giving it your excuse when asked about the small matter of trespassing and invading the Capitol by the police officers on the phone that the president invited you to be there. I'm assuming that the day's strategic brains were given out, all these insurrectioning terrorists were too busy trawling the 8chan boards or listening to Trump bleating on to turn up. Trump must, of course, be delighted to be so absent-mindedly incriminated by people not only dumb enough to leave shit behind, but dumber enough to ask the police to mail it back, presumably in the same jiffy bag as the arrest warrant.
If Butthead were a Batman villain, he might look like Congressman Matt Gaetz, but he'd probably be less sleazy. I didn't read the comic books, but none of the Batman films involve sex trafficking of minors, so I'm going with Gaetz as the worst of those options. It's been a while since we've heard much about the big giant head's legal woes, but anyone who feels like claiming there's nothing to see here because he hasn't been charged with a crime might want to hold off on that argument for a bit. According to CBS, federal prosecutors granted immunity to Gaetz' ex-girlfriend in exchange for testimony in front of a grand jury, and we all know how much ex-girlfriends like to respectfully keep your deepest, darkest secrets. When you add that to the significant amount of assistance that Gaetz's friend Joel Greenberg apparently gave authorities to get his 33 charges knocked down to 6, it's not looking super great for Gaetz. I'd suggest he get a lawyer, but he's way ahead of me, since last September it was reported that his legal team includes Mark Furnish, former lawyer of both former alive paedophile and sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein and former head of Nexium sex cult Keith Raniere, who is currently serving 120 years for crimes including sex trafficking minors. Let's hope his lawyer's track record holds out.
Not all bad news this week. New York State Attorney General Letitia James's office subpoenaed Trump last month, seeking a deposition as part of the ongoing civil investigation, which is focused on potential fraud related to the valuation of various properties in the Trump organization's portfolio. Don Jr. and Ivanka were subpoenaed earlier this month. It turns out that lying about the size of your assets, fellas, will eventually get you into trouble when the real size is revealed. In a motion from James's office filed on Tuesday, it says the valuations of Mr. Trump's triplex apartment in Trump Tower since at least 2012 were based on the assertion that the triplex apartment was 30,000 square feet in size, which was done to obtain favourable tax rates and loans. However, the actual size of Mr. Trump's triplex apartment was 10,996 square feet, and documents confirming the fact were signed by Mr. Trump himself in 2012. The investigators note that the key thing here is this new information demonstrates that Trump and his family are personally implicated in this fraud. Hopefully the sound of us gleefully clapping our hands won't echo too much in Trump's massive apartment.
You could be forgiven for thinking that the Supreme Court is too far gone for us to have any hope left that they'll make a rational decision this decade. After all, they just ruled against OSHA's ability to mandate vaccines in the workplace on the grounds that work isn't the only place you can catch COVID. So why bother protecting people while they're there? With that in mind, an 8-1 decision on whether Trump can assert executive privilege over hundreds of documents requested by the January 6th committee could just be one more very bad thing. But it's not. Yes, apart from Clarence Thomas, every Supreme Court justice appears to agree with the appeals court finding that former presidents don't get to decide what documents a sitting president is allowed to tell the National Archives to produce. As always, as low as that bar is set, it's just nice to know there's still a bar.
In a rather food-based instalment of the decade-long Tory Party psychodrama that is politics in Britain, Boris's addiction to drinks and finger food at party/work events prompted a so-called pork pie putsch led by the Melton Mowbray MP, involving the 2019 intake MPs discussing how to give him the chop. In order to save his bacon, Operation Red Meat was launched to appease the gamins on the backbenches by throwing the Navy at immigration, the BBC under the bus, along with any amount of as-yet-unnamed junior ministers in whom he hitherto had pride and full confidence, at the Sucre's findings, as well as the entire populace, yes, that's all of us, by doing away with every single COVID restriction currently in force. Some cheering could be heard from the gravy train on the backbenches amongst the hacking coughs and airborne droplets. Far be it from me to suggest he is putting his own self-preservation ahead of any actual health advice, but he is putting self-preservation ahead, above and beyond anything else that might protect, benefit or nourish anyone other than himself. Meanwhile, one of that blue wall intake of the 2019 election defected to the Labour Party. Boris blustered that Bury South turned Tory in 2019 for the first time in generations under this Prime Minister. Not true. And it took Starmer actually pointing to the actual MPs actually sat behind him to remind him that actually Bury South is now a Labour seat under the same Prime Minister. The Scottish Tory Party leader was described as a weakling for calling for Boris to resign, and the Scottish National Party leader, Ian Blackford, summed it all up by describing Operation Save Big Dog as Operation Dog's Dinner. And finally, Tory MP and former Brexit Minister David Davis quoted Cromwell and Boris's own Churchill biography when telling Boris in a packed House of Commons, "You have sat too long here for any good you have been doing. In the name of God, go." God was unavailable for comment.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher or wherever you get the podcasts. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our newest patron, Stefan Weisner, our strawman level patrons, Stephen Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reiki, and Amber R. Buchanan, and our true Scotsman level patrons, Kaz Tui, thanks for the pledge edit, Kaz, Andrew Hauk, Max Beaver, and our top patron, Lauren. Thanks very much, everybody. Your support is really deeply appreciated. Thank you.
You can connect with those awesome people, as well as us and other listeners, in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outburst and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right, go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
David Davis quoted Cromwell. Quoted Cromwell. David Davis quoted Tory MP.